contrary to finite differences and finite elements, which are based on the local approximation of the function, the Fourier method uses harmonic decompositions. And this is particularly indicated if you have a periodic domain. The power of this Fourier transform is certainly in the fact that spatial operators in configuration space appear very simply as multiplications in the Fourier space. Numerically, the reason why we can think using a Fourier transform to solve partial differential equations resides certainly in the fact that we have a very powerful tool which computes this transformation in n log n operations. Do you remember how many operations you need for an implicit scheme with finite elements? Well, we saw in the previous chapter that you need of the order of n operations to solve the linear system, and therefore the Fourier transform is a little bit less efficient with an n log n dependency. However, you will gain in quality of the representation for short wavelengths, and there is a trade-off there to be weighted one against the other. Generally, if you use a Fourier transformation, always privilege vendor implementations. They've been highly optimized for the specific computer you're going to use, and therefore are very fast. All these Fourier transform implementations reside on the same mathematical background, which is the discrete Fourier transform. And this discrete Fourier transform just says that a function of a variable can be represented by the superposition of harmonic functions. And you can take either a complex series to represent this complex function, or you can take a cosine-sine form where you superpose sinus and cosine functions. In the case your function you want to represent is real, then you have certain symmetry relations among the Fourier coefficients. This is almost how the fast Fourier transform is implemented, as well in the JBone code, except for a certain number of features. To be very fast, you need to have the size of your input data to be a power of 2, an integer power of 2. A second feature is that to avoid negative indices, all the negative harmonics are stored in wraparound order, and this after the positive components. Let's take an example which illustrates how this wraparound order functions. If you start with a constant function, you will, after transformation, get the contribution only to the zeroth order component of the spectrum. If you take the longest wavelength representable in your system, which has just one oscillation over the entire domain, and you take a cosine, then after transformation, you will get contributions to the first component and the very last component of your spectrum. You can understand this because a cosine is the superposition between a positive and negative exponential. Therefore, you get contributions to the positive and negative part of your spectrum. And due to the wraparound order, you store the very long wavelengths at the very end of your spectrum. Note that the amplitude is therefore also divided by 2 in both these contributions. If you take a sinus function, and here, just to make it different, take the second mode, which has 2 oscillations across the periodic domain, you will get contributions to the second component and the second last component of your spectrum. And you will get pair of complex conjugated values, again normal divided by 2 in amplitude. The very shortest wavelength admissible will have exactly 2 mesh points per wavelength and will be in the form of a cosinus. This will be stored in the middle of your wraparound ordered spectrum and will have no associated value for the sinus, because if you sample the sinus function with this rate at 2 mesh points per wavelength, you will sample it exactly for the multiples of pi, and therefore you will always get zero, and this zero is not stored. A third feature of this fast Fourier transformation is that you can transform 2 real functions for the price of 1 single transformation. And this resides on the fact that the FFT, the fast Fourier transform, is a linear operation. So you can gain this factor of 2 by storing 2 real numbers before you do the transformation and get them back in real, in complex format in Fourier space in a certain manner. Let me now look how the Fourier transformation can be used in a case of a linear equation. Now, I assume, and this is the drawback of the Fourier transformation, I have to assume that I deal with at least periodic coefficients, or here generally I will use constant coefficients in my periodic domain. If I use a constant advection and diffusion in a periodic domain, then I can very easily write an evolution equation for each of the Fourier components represented in my domain for the advection and diffusion equation. And there, because of this feature that spatial operators in configuration space become multiplications, I get a very simple algebraic equation for each of the Fourier components. And this I can integrate analytically exactly without any restriction on the time step. And I can write as a function of time what will be the amplitude of this Fourier component, whatever the time is, in terms of directly the initial condition. That's also how the scheme has been implemented in JBone. And after an initial transformation to Fourier space, where you calculate the contribution of the initial condition from the sample grid for each of the Fourier components, the evolution in fact only multiplies this initial spectrum by a phase factor, which is calculated in terms of this exponential, where you add the contribution of advection and diffusion. Having scaled this function for the time of interest, we do a transformation back into real space, in fact only for plotting purposes. We would not need to go back to real space, at least if the equation is linear. Here we go back only for plotting purposes. Now I let you try out in the JBone applet how this Fourier method works on a purely advective scheme. Press start. You will see a very strange propagation of your square pulse. You will have an almost exact representation, or it appears as an exact representation of the square pulse for some times, and some others you will get very lot of oscillations which correspond to the Gibbs phenomenon. Now remember what we saw when we were analyzing the discretization of a function with Fourier methods. We saw that however many discrete harmonic functions we take to represent very sharp edges, we will create oscillations which were called the Gibbs phenomenon. And this is what appears here in the applet, and appears a little bit in a misleading manner. When you see a perfect square, you see in fact only the discretely sampled values of this Gibbs phenomenon, and therefore you don't represent correctly all the oscillations you should see. Whereas in some cases, for some time steps, the mesh points here of this global function hit exactly the top and the bottom of the valleys of these Gibbs oscillations, and therefore appear to be very bad. In fact, if we would do the plotting correctly, we would simply see what you see in the figure of your discretization chapter propagating forward in time. So don't be fooled by this representation. Having seen how the purely advective scheme propagates forward in time, let's first change the value of the diffusion coefficient and increase it to 0.3, for example. And now I'm interested in propagating forward the scheme. Press Start. Having done so, I propose increase the time step to the largest value we're interested in, the runtime, which is here 64. Again, press Start. You see now that in one single time step, we computed a perfect analytical solution of an advection diffusion scheme. This is certainly very powerful and works very nicely in a homogeneous domain. I let you try now to compare this perfect solution with a finite element scheme and repeat the same exercise also by changing the implicit time step. Time parameter, and you will see, you will be able to compare the different schemes one against the other by, for example, monitoring the maximum amplitude. However, when you do this exercise, remember that you're propagating a square pulse, which is testing, of course, the numerics to the very limit, but is something you should never physically do, because exactly, you work in a range of parameters where you will expect a lot of numerical diffusion and numerical dispersion, and that's the reason of the difference between the solutions of the finite element and Fourier method in this particular case. Having seen what can happen with linear equations, let's have some second thoughts about what is happening when you do a Fourier transformation of a discrete sampled data. We saw that the shortest wavelength, which is admissible when you have a sampling, is corresponding to 2 mesh points per wavelength. In Fourier space, this corresponds to the highest mode number, or the shortest wavelength, which is called the Nyquist critical wavelength. So if you draw a picture, a function of the amplitude as a function of the wave vector, you see that an input data, an input spectrum, will be cut at this Nyquist critical wavelength, and the data will not be represented correctly above this value of the critical wavelength. Worse even than that, the data at higher wavelengths, shorter wavelengths, will be aliased down into lower components. And this is the so-called phenomenon of aliasing, which appears already if you want to do the digital acquisition of some data. Look, for example, at the figure recorded from the joint European torus of magnetic fluctuations between 0 and 500 kilohertz. You see how an exciter antenna appears in a sawtooth-like manner in this spectrum as a function of time. So in this experiment, there was a magnetic perturbation created inside the fusion plasma and was exciting a signal at a frequency which was evolving in time. And you see this frequency evolve in time on the picture. Now, if you look very carefully around 200 kilohertz, around 1.5 seconds, when the antenna reaches a minimum excitation frequency, you have at the same time a maximum sawtooth appearing, which does not correspond to any excitation physically input into the system. What happened here is that the linear excitation of the antenna was due to a nonlinear phenomenon exciting some higher frequency, which was not represented in the digital acquisition of the system. Despite heavy low-pass filtering, so we were here the data has been filtered so as to remove high-frequency components, the digital acquisition system was sensitive enough to pick up this high-frequency component, which was then aliased down again into low-frequency components. And therefore, you see the signal rises when the antenna frequency decreases and the other way around. So this is a number of features you should take into account already when you do an experiment and digital data acquisition. You need to band pass or low pass filter the data before you do the sampling, before you transfer the data to digital. How can such a filter be formulated? In fact, once you have your data in the Fourier spectrum, it is very simple to multiply it by some filter function. And all you should remember is if you have a real function in the beginning, you need to satisfy some symmetry property on your filter to keep this data real after filtering. So you could, for example, choose this filter function real and even in the mode number. And what you should also take into account is that sharp transitions in your filter will create phase errors and dampings corresponding to these sharp edges in the Fourier representation. And therefore, it's better to use smooth transitions, smooth filters, which don't suffer from these limitations. Before we go any further, I would like you now to test in the JBone applet such an alias. This you can do going back to JBone page and open in the Fourier method an initial condition where the wavelength of a cosine corresponds to something shorter than the two mesh points per wavelength, which are the limit of the sampling of your data. For example, if you take the wavelength equals to 1.05, which is satisfying the periodicity condition in your particular applet, you will find that the plot shows up as a very long wavelength function. This is, in fact, incorrectly joining the sampling points for the plotting, neglecting the oscillations which occur in between the mesh points. So you should, in fact, if you would plot things correctly, obtain a very, very strongly oscillating function. You have almost only one mesh point per wavelength. This component, however, is present, and you can even compute an evolution for it. Try to do an evolution by pressing your start button. You see that this aliased component, which is non-physical, is present, and is in fact just a matter of interpretation. So you can choose the Brillouin zone you're working in, as long as you know how to plot the signal in an appropriate manner. And for linear equations, there is no problem with this. The problem arises, however, with nonlinear terms. And we saw that, for example, for the Korteweg-de-Vries or the Berger equation, there was a quadratic wave-breaking nonlinearity. How does such a nonlinearity appear in Fourier space? This is, in fact, understood in terms of the convolution theorem. You know that the convolution of two functions in Fourier space appears as a simple product. Now, the reverse is unfortunately also true. A simple product in real space, or a quadratic component of a function, appears as a convolution in Fourier space. And therefore, if you start with a short wavelength component and convolute this short wavelength component due to the nonlinearity with itself, you will create an even shorter wavelength component. And this one may not be represented at all in your system. And if this is the case, it will be aliased down into longer wavelengths. So you pollute the long wavelength channels through aliasing. A simple cure for this is, of course, simply to expand the size of your arrays and represent these short wavelengths during the convolution, and then discard them, so to say. That's the simplest way to do a filtering. You discard this data, which you're anyway not able to represent. So let's see how this appears in the Korteweg-de-Vries equation or the Berger equation when they're solved with Fourier technique. Writing this general nonlinear equation, adding an advection term, a diffusion term, a dispersion term, with a nonlinear wave-breaking term altogether, we write a generalized nonlinear equation. This generalized nonlinear equation can be transformed into Fourier space to calculate the evolution of single Fourier components. Clearly, the nonlinear terms appear as purely algebraic operators. The diffusion operator will appear as a quadratic term in terms of the wave vector. The advective term will simply have a term proportional to the advection velocity, and the wave number multiplied by the imaginary number I. The quadratic nonlinearity can also be dealt with for the operator in Fourier space, and you get an algebraic operator. The component itself, however, will remain the Fourier transform of a quadratic function, which is, in Fourier space, in fact, a convolution. So here you have the choice. You could either calculate this convolution directly in Fourier space. This is an expensive way of doing it. Alternatively, what you can do is you do a Fourier transformation, calculate a simple product of the function with itself, and come back to Fourier space. That's the way it has been done in the JBON applet. So you calculate the evolution of each of the Fourier components by taking, at a certain time step, a phase-shifted value due to the linear terms, and by using a simple Euler integration, scale the nonlinear quadratic term calculated with two FFTs for the convolution. One feature of this scheme is that you can choose whether you want to expand the Fourier spectrum or not, and therefore you will either get a convolution which is aliased, or you will get a convolution which is entirely correct. And I let you now execute the scheme and try to find out for the Korteweg-Dewries equation how both the expanded convolution and the aliased convolution look like. It's certainly remarkable to see how the aliasing strongly affects the evolution after a short time. You develop into an instability which certainly here is purely nonlinear. It's a nonlinear instability which is created by the aliasing and appears as very, very short wavelength oscillations. Now, knowing that a diffusion generally removes the short wavelength components, you could add a tiny amount of diffusion into your scheme. Clearly, you will not be dealing with the Korteweg-Dewries equation anymore, since you add now some diffusion which has more the character of a Burger equation. But you will remove part of the problem because you will remove these aliases. And that's what happens if you use a finite difference scheme. Switch to finite differences for the Korteweg-Dewries equation and try to calculate the evolution with the explicit three-level scheme proposed by Zabuski and Kruskal. You'll find a almost perfect evolution of your solitons, which is largely due to the fact that the short wavelength components are strongly damped by the numerics, by the finite differencing. There is an exercise exactly on this where you have to calculate what is the equivalent filter for the linear terms using the finite differences as compared to the Fourier scheme. And you will see that by removing artificially, non-physically, short wavelengths, we create an evolution which is much more reasonable and correct. Now, don't get excited about this too much, because let's assume now you use a Burger equation and remove entirely the dispersion, add diffusion instead. Calculate again what you would obtain for an aliased convolution and compare with an expanded convolution. You'll find very little difference. Clearly, again, because diffusion removes the short wavelengths. However, you will strongly affect the cascade between the energy stored in the different Fourier components by having an aliased scheme. You will allow this energy to couple between wavelengths which are not physically coupled. And therefore, even though you may have a scheme which looks almost perfect, the physics, the final distribution of energy in the different wavelengths, may be affected by the convolution. And now it is, of course, very much more difficult to find out whether your solution is correct or not. Let's have finally a quick look at the exercises, where the main focus will be to understand and compare the finite difference scheme proposed by Zabuski and Kruskal with an exact representation in Fourier space. By understanding the numerical diffusion of Zabuski's finite difference scheme, you will understand why a finite difference scheme can sometimes be better, even though it does treat the short wavelengths in a numerically incorrect manner. It's probably also a good opportunity to examine the generalized nonlinear equation with diffusion and dispersion, try to understand what parameter regimes could be of interest in general in a regime where you're dominated by the physics, I hope.